This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The majority of the corn, soybeans, and canola in the United States is genetically engineered, mostly to be resistant to certain pests or herbicides. And that means most packaged or processed food sold in this country contains ingredients that were grown with genetic engineering. Last year, the Vermont legislature passed a bill that requires food manufacturers to label products with genetically modified ingredients. Governor Peter Shumlin signed the bill in May of 2014, saying the law would empower Vermont consumers.
Vermonters have spoken loud and clear. They want to know what's in their food. We are pro-choice. We are pro-information. Vermont gets it right with this bill.
Observers predicted big manufacturers would sue to prevent the law from taking effect, and that suit is pending. But last week, a second effort to prevent mandatory labeling played out in the U.S. Congress when the House of Representatives passed a bill calling for voluntary labeling and preventing states from passing their own stricter laws. If it gets approval from the Senate and is signed by the president, it would trump Vermont's state law requiring labeling. Congressional supporters of the bill say mandating labels on products that contain GMOs is misleading. They argue that the Food and Drug Administration says that GMOs are not risky to eat and that labels would raise the cost of food. Here's Kansas Representative Mike Pompeo.
Mandatory labeling of genetically engineered products has no basis in legitimate health or safety concerns, but is a naked attempt to impose the preferences of a small segment of the populace on the rest of us.
The GMO food fight is just one of the issues we'll get into in this hour with Governor Peter Shumlin. Also on deck are healthcare policy, a proposed ethics commission, and more. Governor Shumlin, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're really glad to have you here, and I'd love for you first to respond to what you just heard Representative Pompeo saying. The scientific community, by and large, certainly not exclusively, but by and large, says there's no indication that genetic modification is dangerous in and of itself to human health. In fact, in some cases, it is designed to provide nutritional value to people in places where they're undernourished or to preserve native species that may be threatened. So what was your reaction when you heard the House was passing this bill?
You know, I just think it's a terrible tragedy, and we've got to make sure that it dies, and we've got to make sure if it does get to the president's desk that he vetoes it. This is an effort by the industry to simply ensure that they can continue with the flawed policies that they're currently following. Now, listen, on this one, Vermont isn't weighing in on whether or not GMOs are safe or unsafe. We don't weigh in on the science. All our bill says is consumers want to know what's in their food, and they have a right to know. Now, let's look at some of the things that the federal government does require that you label. They require that you label whether or not orange juice is made from concentrate or whether it's fresh squeezed. Now, no one would argue that that's a health issue. We don't have members of Congress jumping up and down saying, let's make sure that we remove this labeling from orange juice containers because there's no scientific evidence that concentrate is more dangerous than fresh squeezed. So, you know, these folks just don't make any sense. All we're saying is very simply, Vermonters have the right to know what's in their food. 36 other countries have made the choice of GMO labeling. It hasn't affected sales. Why are we so afraid of letting consumers know what they want to know that we're going to pass a federal bill that precludes states from making choices like Vermont has made? It just really is a symptom of our times, and it's because the big food manufacturers are giving huge amounts of money to the campaign war chests of these folks in Congress, and they have a lot of influence.
I want to invite listeners in on this part of the conversation and on everything that we're going to discuss today, but I know some people probably have questions for you about GMO issues. And if you do want to weigh in, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your questions online. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. We got a note on this from Jerry in Ripton, who says, sadly, Vermont's government has sided with those who believe that food ingredients from plants grown with GMO techniques are harmful. Though our leaders ought to represent our interests, they also have an obligation to do pertinent research and keep the citizenry informed. The FDA has found GMO foods to be safe. Most Americans have eaten them for decades without harm. In requiring labeling, the state of Vermont legitimizes irrational fears.
And my response to that is, if Jerry feels that way, he certainly should that should be his prerogative, and he should buy the food that he wishes to buy, and obviously he couldn't care less whether it has GMOs or not. There are an awful lot of Vermonters that I've spoken with who really do care, and they want to know. And, you know, just as we currently label so much on an ingredient packet, all this bill says is consumers have the right to know whether or not it GMO, and there's a huge debate about the science, about the efficacy, about what this all means. I'm proud to be the governor in a country that said, you know, Maine, as you probably know, and Connecticut both signed bills into law saying, you know, when 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 other states do it, we will. And we in Vermont said, no, you know, if this is the right thing to do, we should do it. We shouldn't wait for other states. We expected the food manufacturers to sue us. That's exactly what they've done. We won an injunction recently in federal court that said that they, you know, they couldn't stand in the way of the law becoming law on July 1st, while the
of
case
2016.
Is being, of 2016, while the courts are, you know, winding way through the process to make a decision. But bottom line is, I respect Jerry's view about GMOs. I also respect the view of other Vermonters, and it absolutely puzzles me why the food manufacturers are so afraid of labeling if they say that, in fact, these ingredients are totally harmless. If they're harmless, what do you care if they're labeled or not?
Well, I mean, I guess to take their side, they would say because the very fact of labeling suggests that there's a problem that people should be concerned about, and that's not what the bulk of scientific data or the FDA is saying.
Well, if you look at an ingredients package, it lists all kinds of items, sugar, dyes, you name it. It's all on there. Those aren't listed because we necessarily think that they're all dangerous. It's listed because consumers want to know what's in the ingredients they're buying. And this really is a right-to-know bill. And I'm just absolutely perplexed that the food manufacturers who've gone through this in other countries where they all sell food, 36 countries now do this, why they're so bound and determined to say to the American consumer, you can't do this in America, but in other countries, this is commonplace. You go to Western Europe, and they label.
I want to ask you about the fund that Vermont has established to set up to help defray the costs of litigating this law. But before we do, let's go to Charles, who's calling in from Macungie, Pennsylvania. Actually, calling in from Vermont, but he's from Macungie. Hi, Charles. You're driving through the state. What's your question?
Yes.
Welcome to Vermont, by the way.
Comment about the difference between GMOs. There are some GMOs, I don't think many people would argue, that a modification to allow a plant to be grown in a harsher climate might be agreeable, but a GMO that allows a producer to spray it with a glyphosate, like Roundup, and then, you know, put the food on your table might be very disagreeable. And I think that there's a huge difference, but since we can't, you know, trust the current, we have no confidence in what these corporations are doing, I do agree that we should at least allow consumers to make that choice.
Well, thanks, Jerry, and you should move to Vermont because there are an awful lot of Vermonters that agree with you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Charles. And listeners, if you want to weigh in, again, our number 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post at vpr.net. Talking about GMOs right now, but we're also going to be getting into education, perhaps, some questions about that coming in. We're going to talk about healthcare. We're going to talk about Lake Champlain cleanup and what we expect to hear from the EPA and when. We're still waiting on that. I thought we'd know by now. So if you have questions, go ahead and call 1-800-639-2211. Just before we leave the question of the bill that was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives, it goes now to the Senate. If it passes the Senate, it would go to the president's desk. Do you have the ear of the president on this, or do you think that you could encourage our delegation to talk to him about this? Do you know where he stands?
I've talked to the president about all kinds of issues, and I've never brought up this one because, frankly, I never thought that a bill would come out of Congress, would actually pass Congress, that basically takes away states' rights on any issue like this. And the irony is, you know, this is coming out of the Republican Congress, who are all for local control and states' rights. They're constantly saying, let states decide, leave the federal government out of it. The federal government's too big and bossy, until the big campaign donors come along, and then all of a sudden they change their minds. But, you know, I will, if this gets to the president's desk, I will talk to him about it, and I think a lot of other folks will too. The good news is Senator Leahy, Senator Sanders, Congressman Welch are with us on this one, as you can imagine. And, you know, we're going to follow the bill very carefully. But I would urge people to call their any, you know, call congressional offices, call U.S. Senate offices and say, listen, the DARK Act, as it's called, let's put that to sleep. It doesn't make sense that federal government should supersede states' rights, states' choices, and the ability of consumers to know what's in their food. So we all have some work to do, and I will do mine.
All right, so we're getting into a federalism argument here already.
Exactly.
Let's go to Mark calling in from Waterbury. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I buy GMO-free foods, and they're already labeled non-GMO. Why do we have to spend money and make a law? Companies that have non-GMO foods already label it that way.
Some do. You're right about that, and they do so voluntarily, and that's great. But what Vermont law says is, like so many other items in the ingredient list, and you can see if you go look at the food you're buying, it's I'm sure you have, it's a long, long list. We think it's really important that every item disclose whether or not it's, you know, this is something consumers want to know. Are there GMOs in my food or not? And as Charles just called in and said, you know, there are GMOs and there are GMOs. But I think it's really important that consumers have the right to know what's in their foods. And it's so basic. You know, if you're feeding young children, as many of us have done as parents, it really matters to you to know what you're buying. And I think this is really just a question of giving consumers the rights that they deserve in a country that is now driven by bigger and bigger corporations that are growing food.
Well, you're going to have to defend the law against some of those corporations who have a very large bankroll. And so we got a question from Stephen in Morrisville who wants to know, how is the legal battle on the GMO labeling law being funded?
So we launched the Vermont Food Fight Fund, we call it. You can go to the website, vermontfoodfightfund.org. And basically what we launched when we signed the bill was just the ability for consumers to give to the fund so that we could hire really great lawyers to work with the Attorney General's office where we have great lawyers to try and win this thing. Because we're taking on, they're hiring the most powerful, capable lawyers in the country, as you can imagine. We now have raised $550,000 into that fund. It was helped last week by Neil Young, who gave $100,000 personally.
You got to be up on stage with him at the Champlain Valley Expo.
I did, and I spoke with Neil this week, and he wants to help in other ways. We're trying to think of other ways that he can help us raise money. He's trying to get some other musicians involved. So, you know, I'm optimistic that we can raise the money, but it's important that people who care about this issue give to Vermont. And what I've explained to Neil and others is, on this issue, what happens in Vermont happens in America. In other words, if we go to federal court, if this goes to the Supreme Court, as it may well, and Vermont loses this case, it's going to set back consumer labeling on GMOs for generations for every single state. And if Vermont wins it, it will promote labeling across the country, and consumers will quickly, I think, find, much like we started with civil unions and it became marriage equality, and folks thought Vermont were a little ahead of our time. They then realized that they were behind the times. I think food labeling would travel a very similar journey.
And you think it's worth it, the cost that it is going to well, the price that it's going to be for Vermont to defend this? I mean, certainly some of that money is coming from private individuals and companies to help the state defend, but some of it's going to be coming from state money, and it's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions.
You're right. And this is the standard I've always set as governor. If something is important to consumers or to Vermonters, do we not do it because we're going to be sued by powerful corporations who have deep pockets? And I say, if you cave, as other states have, to the pressure that this is going to cost us a lot of money, we might win, we might not, it's never guaranteed, although I think we've got a great case. If you start caving to those kind of corporate pressures, you end up with a democracy that is undermined simply because the threat of suit stop you from doing what you think is right for the people that elect you. So that's where I drew the line on this bill and said, we're not going to do the game where you say, if other states do this, we're afraid we're going to get sued. We don't want to carry the burden. You know, Vermont is doing the right thing here. We did the right thing on civil unions, which became marriage equality. If Vermont didn't lead on issues like this, we'd have a very different country. So I think we should be proud that Vermont's leading on this one. And we should not be threatened by big corporations that have deep pockets and banks of powerful lawyers that are somehow going to dissuade us from doing what Vermonters want us to do.
I want to take two quick comments from listeners on this, and then we're going to move on to other issues. Edward's on the line with us from Montreal. Go ahead, Edward.
There's a lot of consumers that are concerned about Samarisol in vaccinations, and yet the government doesn't put doesn't mandate that containing Samarisol be a warning given to all parents. In fact, like, we know that there's a lot of delusion out there and misinformation on the vaccine issue. And I think the same thing holds true vis-a-vis GMOs. And so by mandating the label, you're reinforcing the non-scientific belief, because you're saying that the government considers this to be important. I think that's how it would be interpreted.
Edward, thanks for your thoughts. We'll take one more from Bonnie, and then if you want to jump in before we go, we'll let
sure.
you do that. Governor Bonnie, your thoughts here. Bonnie calling in from Brattleboro.
Hi. My thought is about the cost of the manufacturers to change their labels, and mm-hmm. I think that's what they're balking at.
Bonnie, thanks for your comment on that. Yeah, the manufacturers say changing the labels will cost them money. They'll pass this on to consumers. Bonnie saying, I think it's just that they're afraid of having to spend more money.
I think Bonnie's right. And frankly, we all know that, I mean, I don't know what they're afraid of, but we all know that they label on all kinds of issues now. And to add one ingredient is just not that big a deal. They'd have to do it for all 50 states to really make it work. And that'd be a good thing. So Vermont would be pushing the envelope. I want to go to Edward's
yeah.
comment. Edward, I'm not going to weigh in on a debate on the science of vaccinations any more than I do on the science of GMOs, because I'm not a scientist. But this is how I view it. With vaccinations, you are putting someone else in jeopardy because of your choice. With GMOs, it's all about you. And therefore, I really think that from government standpoint, as a governor, that's where I draw the line. You know, if Vermonters want to know what's in their food and it's about them and their choice and their beliefs, let's let them do that. If they're going to not vaccinate their children and therefore put other people in danger, let's not let them do that. And I think that's sort of the difference in the sort of the black and white for me on this issue.
All right. We've been talking with Governor Shumlin about some potential threats to Vermont's mandatory GMO labeling law that's supposed to go into effect on July 1st of next year. We're going to talk about some other issues coming right up. So, listeners, if you want to weigh in on any other issues to talk about with the governor, we'll get to GMOs again, I promise, because this is not an issue that's going away. But if you want to talk to the governor about health care, maybe you're curious about how it's going with Vermont's Health Connect, the exchange website, and whether or not we may still move to the federal exchange, maybe we'll have a partnership with Connecticut. We're going to talk to the governor about that coming up. We're also, as I said, going to talk about Lake Champlain cleanup, the cost, some other environmental issues and water quality, and whatever's on your mind. Now is your chance to ask the governor a question. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your questions online, go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're spending the hour with the governor, Governor Peter Shumlin. We were just talking about Vermont's GMO labeling law, but there are other big issues the governor is spending time on, including Lake Champlain cleanup, the possible formation of an independent ethics commission for the state, and ongoing analysis of Vermont's health care costs and the insurance exchange. If you have a question for the governor about any of these topics or other things that are important to you, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Governor, Vermont's 14 hospitals have just submitted their budgets for fiscal year 2016, which starts on the 1st of October. They're asking the Green Mountain Care Board to approve a 3.6% increase over last year. You put out a press release when the budgets were submitted celebrating the continued low growth rates that Vermont hospitals have been held to over the last couple of years. But this submitted rate is higher than the rates that the hospitals have submitted in the past 2 years. Does this suggest to you that hospitals are going to be unable to maintain those very low increases that they've been submitting for the past couple of years?
I don't think so. You know, this is one of the issues that is so in the weeds and so incredibly important to every single Vermonter. I mean, when we talk about making Vermont more affordable and giving Vermonters, you know, when incomes aren't growing much across America, the question is, so why are we hurting so much? And the answer is, if you really look at the numbers, not just in Vermont, but across the country, healthcare costs are rising faster than we can earn money. And for both individuals and business, if this continues, we all have a very, very bleak future. So there's nothing more important than containing healthcare costs. What we've seen in Vermont over the last few years is actually pretty impressive. You know, if you go back a few years, 07, we saw almost 9% growth, 06 almost 9% growth. This is in hospital budgets. 05 close to 9%, 7.8 in 08. When I took over in 010, 5%. We set up the Green Mountain Healthcare Board, and it has been extraordinarily successful in helping to contain healthcare costs, with the hospitals all helping to do it too. But bottom line is, in 14, we had 1.5% growth. In 15, we had 2.7% growth. And this year, they proposed 3.6. Don't forget, they proposed more of the hospitals last year. They go through a regulatory process. I fully expect the Green Mountain Healthcare Board to whittle that number down.
Well, and in fact, I exchanged emails with Al Gobay this morning. He's the chair of the Green Mountain Care
right.
Board, and he said there's a guarantee that that number, the 3.6% increase, would go down, because in it right now is factored in $4 million in physician transfer dollars. Those will be adjusted out. So even if the Green Mountain Care Board approved the budgets as they were submitted,
they were,
it would
right.
be a little
it
bit lower than that.
But I think you'll see them do more. And my point is twofold. One, we are doing the right things to help contain cost in our hospital growth. We still have a lot of way to travel. And as you know, both Al Gobay, the Green Mountain Healthcare Board, and myself are bound and determined to move Vermont from a fee-for-service, quantity-driven payment system to one that reimburses for keeping people healthy. That's a revolution in the way we reimburse for health care. It's got to be everybody in over time, and we're really working hard behind the scenes to try to figure out how to do it and how to make it happen quickly.
But one of the ways that you had proposed helping to bend the curve here in the past session was a payroll tax that you had suggested implementing on Vermont businesses, a 0.7% payroll tax that would help help sort of deal with what is called the Medicaid
cost shift.
Yes, thank you. And that's when basically private insurers are picking up the tab for Medicaid patients, because the government does not reimburse physicians at the rate that it actually costs them to treat these patients. And the legislature didn't go for your plan. How bothered are you by that still?
All Vermonters should be deeply troubled by that, for this simple reason. When we just talked about hospital budgets and hospital growth, that's about 60% of our spend. But still, it's pretty darn good that we're holding costs. It's 40-year lows that we're holding hospital costs to right now. So the obvious question is, well, how come when I get my private insurance premium, or I go to Vermont Health Connect and look at my premium, how come I'm not seeing that reflected? My healthcare costs keep going up 8, 10, 12, 18% a year. And the answer is that even if we hold the hospital budgets down, because we're under reimbursing for Medicaid, and think about this, almost there are 200,000 Vermonters, only 650,000 of us, 200,000 Vermonters will be on some form of Medicaid this year, a little bit more than that. So a third of our state, because we underpay our providers for those folks when they come into the office, we got to make that up somewhere. That cost gets shifted somewhere, and it gets shifted to the folks who buy private insurance. So we've got to solve that problem. My payroll tax would have been a huge step in solving that. I understand that passing any kind of revenue is really, really difficult. But really what happens when you don't do that, when you don't address it head on, is you pay for it anyway. You just pay for it in your premium increase healthcare tax instead of your payroll tax. And so it's a choice you have to make. I personally think a payroll tax is a much fairer way to do it than shifting it to the folks who buy private insurance, which we want them to do, and businesses keep seeing these incredibly escalating costs.
Let's go to Ann, who's on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Ann. You're on.
Hi. Hi, Jane. I'm always amazed that we don't focus our education and our health education on nutrition. So much of the health problems that we have currently are things that can be addressed not only by medicine, but by nutrition. And I'm thinking about the diabetes. I'm thinking about the extreme overweight. I'm thinking about the Mediterranean diet. You know, many, many people know about. There are even some people who are doctors who don't have that information about nutritional benefits and how to balance nutrition in your diet. We should be teaching this in the high schools and in the colleges to help lower the cost of health care.
Anne, thanks for your comment. Appreciate that. We'll leave that one there and go to a question that we got as well about, let's talk about what we're going to do now in terms of shifting the way we practice medicine. You just mentioned, Governor Shumlin, that the idea should be not fee-for-service, but a payment system where doctors are paid to keep people healthy. If we move away from our fee-for-service payment system, that's a massive transformation, as you said. And the state has already sort of burned Vermonters' confidence in how to make that work and how to handle major transformations in healthcare, partly because of the way that we implemented the state healthcare exchange, the website that was supposed to deal with insurance payments for the state and under Obama's healthcare plan. Why should Vermonters have faith in you when you say this is the direction we need to go and we can make it work for Vermont?
So I think we make a big mistake as a state if when things don't go well, we say, well, let's just stick with what we've got. There isn't anyone in the healthcare industry, I don't think there's anyone in business, I don't think there's anyone who's looking at the numbers who can say, if states just stick with what they have, everything will be beautiful, because it will not. We will all continue to lose economic power, jobs to the states that are outsmarting us on healthcare. So let's look at the Vermont Health Connect. Vermont Health Connect was a federally mandated bill. Governors had two choices, build your own exchange or go to the federal. Both had big problems. What I have said to Vermonters is, I believe that the best outcome of implementing the federal bill would be to have Vermont's exchange work. And I am doing everything in my power. I work every day on this, had meetings again this morning with my team, to deliver on the promise that I've made to Vermonters that when re-enrollment happens on November 1st, that exchange will be humming. If it's not, we definitely got to do something different. Now, there's no easy solutions there. But if we then say, because we and the other states all struggled with this federal bill in the federal government, we should quit on trying to contain cost because everything will be fine if we just leave things the way they are. It's just not the case. So let's go back to Ann's question on nutrition. Why is it that we all know that if we exercise, if we eat well, if we do preventative, we all succeed and we reduce cost? Why doesn't the system drive us to do that? The reason is that we need to do quantity if you're in this fee-for-service system to survive. And I'll just tell you a very specific story. I know I shouldn't tell stories on the air, but this sort of illustrates how broken our system is. I'm down in Rutland meeting with the Chamber of Commerce business folks at the hospital. I have next to me a big employer down there, John Casella. John's telling a story about how they're all doing heart healthy, they're exercising, and he's got this whole company on this extraordinary effort where they're doing getting everyone in shape, eating great food, getting off the smokes, doing all the things that Ann just talked about, emphasizing nutrition, getting it all right. And they're seeing their healthcare costs go down and their incidence of utilization, use of healthcare system, drop dramatically. I'm sitting next to the CEO of the hospital down there, a great guy with a good sense of humor who's doing a great job trying to run a hospital. And he literally turns to John and he goes, John, that's all great news, but I just want you to know, as one of our biggest private payers in Rutland, if you keep doing that, you're not going to have a hospital to go to when you need it, because in a fee-for-service system, we need volume to survive. Now think how screwed up that is for a minute. Think how intrinsically broken the system is. So the point is, if Vermont can help to get this one right first, and we're a small state where we're unusual, you know, we have no for-profit hospitals. We've got a bunch of providers out there who are working really hard who want to do health care. They don't really want to do billing. They don't really want to do fee-for-service. We are able to have a conversation in the state that other states can't, where we are trying to make a deal with the federal government, frankly, where we can bring everybody into a system where providers get paid for exactly what Ann just called in about, making sure that you're eating right, that you're exercising, that you're off the smokes. We're all in it together. And when we succeed, we all succeed economically, instead of the current system where our healthcare system goes bankrupt, goes out of business if they're too good at doing prevention. I mean, that's a pretty messed up system.
All right, so let's take it as a given for a moment that everybody's with you on that basic concept, which, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying is true, but let's just take that as our platform.
How sweet that would be, Jane, but yes.
So the devil then is in the details, and some of these right. are very big details.
Yes, they are.
And I don't think you and I have talked since the Supreme Court ruled on King versus Burwell, and this was the question about whether patients in states that are on the federal exchange will still be able to get their subsidies. And this was a big question in many people's minds, but in Vermont as well, about whether or not we would even really legitimately want to think about moving to the federal exchange system, because if the subsidies were no longer in place, that would be a problem. The Supreme Court ruled that no, patients who are in states who use the federal exchange will be able to maintain their subsidies. So does that put the Federal Exchange more on your plate as a consideration? Are you thinking about perhaps moving to the Connecticut Exchange, which is expanding to other states and is a state that has had success with its own state exchange?
So the best outcome would be for, and the cheapest and the most logical would be for our exchange to work. Let me explain to you why. When Vermont took the federal money and every state got big chunks of money, a couple $100 million, we made a choice for Vermont taxpayers that has not been well articulated in the press, probably by me. We said, we've got a broken Medicaid technology system right now. Let's use this opportunity to use federal money to rebuild our technology system for just Medicaid. Forget Vermont Health Connect and the people that were coming on a new bill. And they let us do that. So we virtually used the federal money building Vermont Health Connect. So think about this. We've got about 30,000 plus folks in Vermont Health Connect getting private insurance plans. We have 200,000 Vermonters on some form of Medicaid. So in a sense, when you look at the numbers, if you moved our 30,000, whatever it's going to be, folks to the federal exchange or the Connecticut exchange or anything else, frankly, that's chump change compared to the technology that we've got to run, Vermont Health Connect, to take care of the almost a third of Vermonters that would not go to the federal exchange or would not go to Connecticut or would not go to some other dream we have out there. So just pure numbers, our folks are in Medicaid. They're not on the private pay Vermont Health Connect compared, you know, when you look at the simple math. So then the alternative, the federal government is charging states to go to the federal exchange. They don't do that for free. Connecticut doesn't have a customer yet for their partnership. In other words, all the states have said, no, it's too expensive and it doesn't work yet. So I'm not saying no to any of that. I'm just saying the best possible outcome is to have Vermont's exchange work the way it was intended, not just for the smaller number of people who are signing up for Affordable Care Act health care policies, but more importantly, for the Medicaid folks, the vast majority of Vermonters, 200,000 who are in some form of Medicaid, for whom we used the federal money so Vermont taxpayers wouldn't have to pay for it, to upgrade our technology system so they actually have a system that works and makes sense. So it's much more complex than meets the eye.
All right, we'll put a point in the healthcare discussion for now. More to come on that as well as we're talking here with Governor Peter Shumlin. We're going to take more of your questions coming up. Christina's on the line from Fairley, wants to talk about caseworkers at DCF and foster families. We've got other issues and other questions still to come as we spend the hour with Governor Peter Shumlin. And you can add your two cents by going to vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition. You can post a comment or a question there. Or call 1-800-639-22. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm talking today with Governor Peter Shumlin, and we've just been discussing why the governor thinks the best possible outcome for Vermont when it comes to the health care exchange is to strengthen Vermont Health Connect, stick with it, make it work, not move to the federal exchange or another partnership. We're going to move on to some other issues now, and if you have a question for the governor, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or at vpr.net. Christina's on the line from Fairley. Hi, Christina. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Jane. Hi, Governor Shumlin.
Hey, Christina.
I was riding in the car with my foster daughter, Emma, and she asked a question. She said, can I ask the governor a question? And I said, sure. What do you want to ask? And she asked about why caseworkers have such high loads in the state of Vermont. And she also wondered about a shortage of foster parents, especially in our area of the state. We're in central eastern Vermont, and she knows a lot of kids who are kind of waiting for homes, and wondered if you could address that question, and we can listen to that answer offline.
Well, first of all, Emma, thanks for calling through Christina and asking a question, because I'm delighted you did. And Christina, thank you for being such a great foster mom, because you are playing one of the most important roles that you can in Vermont right now. As you know, I've drastically increased the resources to the Department of Children and Families, increased caseworkers because of the challenges that we were having keeping all Vermont's kids safe, and there's no greater priority for me or anyone else in state government. The challenge we're facing, the question is, why do we have higher and higher need and fewer parents to serve that need? And the answer is, in one word, opiate addiction. The biggest victims of the opiate addiction that I've been so obsessed about focusing on is children. In other words, it's not the addicts. It's not the parents that have this terrible, terrible disease, although I got to tell you that is no fun and that is not a great place to be either. But by and large, the biggest victim is the kids, because when you get addicted to this stuff, you will do anything to feed your habit, including forgetting about your kids. So what's happened is, as those caseloads increase, as we have more and more folks signing up for this disease, we have more and more children who are born addicted or who are victims of addiction, who desperately need solid families, moms and dads, people like Christina who come up to the plate and say, I care, I love kids, this isn't fair. We want to give you a strong start too, and I'm here to be a foster parent. So thanks for what you're doing. That's the reason we're in the mess we're in.
Why weren't you more forceful during the legislative session on trying to get more money for the Department for Children and Families to hire more caseworkers? Because a lot of the reports, the independent reports that came out in the last year after the deaths of two toddlers who were under DCF supervision, said one key piece of this is really to lower the caseload pressure on caseworkers, and that would mean hire more caseworkers, I mean, by a factor of 10, and that's just not happening.
Well, actually, I just want to remind you, we were in a terrible budget situation. Everyone was getting cut. We added 18 caseworkers. We reallocated some folks to move them from what they were doing to casework. So we listened to the department very carefully, worked together with the Vermont community.
But that doesn't come close to what the report said was needed in terms of more caseworkers.
Well, the challenge we have is balancing resources, and the truth is nothing in government ever comes close to what you need. As a governor, I can just tell you that's the way it is. If you go talk to the folks up in A&R, they'll tell you we can't enforce permits because we don't have enough folks to do it. If you go talk to corrections, they'll say we don't serve all of our corrections folks because we don't have enough the way we'd ideally like to. We don't have enough resources. So,
but you
as
hear
a state,
often
you make choices.
That, you know, the children are the most important resource. There's a lot of talk about how important it is to protect children, how important children are, and it could feel like hollow talk if it's not backed
up
by money and people.
I would say to anyone who says that this governor's been doing hollow talk on that one, look at the numbers. We literally have increased our opiate addiction by millions and millions of dollars. We're building treatment centers out all over the state. I was down in Bennington on Friday. We expect to have one open down there by fall. We have set up the hub and spoke program so that victims of heroin addiction have a better shot of staying with their parents. We are investing resources in terms, if you look at the graph, in this challenge at a much higher rate than other investments we're making in state government, and we're going to continue to. But, we're up against some pretty intense headwinds here. And it's not just Vermont. The rest of America is, too. You can buy this junk now for $5 a bag in Springfield, Mount Holyoke, New York, Brooklyn. It comes up here. They sell it for $20 or $30 a bag. There's a huge economic incentive for these folks to come in with this stuff, sell it to Vermonters. It's poison. And make a lot of loot. And so we've got some pretty amazing headwinds.
All right, let's see if we can do sort of a lightning round here for about the next Fire 7
up.
Or 8 minutes we've got left. Let me ask you quickly about the possibility of a state ethics commission, an independent ethics commission. This has been proposed by the Secretary of State and some lawmakers. Your spokesman told the Associated Press last week that you are in favor of an independent ethics commission. Why?
Because I think it would give Vermonters confidence that we have a place to go when there are ethics charges leveled against legislators or public officials, and I think it makes a lot, or folks in my administration or any administration, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I've always said that. The devil's in the details. What I care about is that it applies to everybody. In other words, everyone elected, legislative, executive branch, judicial, everyone. And that it doesn't, become a huge bureaucracy that just feeds people's salaries. Let's do it the Vermont way in a sensible way. But I think that the Secretary of State Kondos has made a good recommendation, and it would be helpful to our democracy. Now, lightning, I just want to add this. We're lucky to live in a state where we still have a citizen legislator, where legislators go up there for 600, whatever it is, little pay they get, $650 a week, no health care benefits, no pensions. They don't do it for the money. They do it for the love of the state. And we're lucky to be in that environment. But we should have a place for folks to go when there are ethics questions raised. It's better for the folks whose the questions are raised against. and it's better for democracy.
A couple of the questions have been about ethics have been raised against people in your own administration, and I will move on to some other topics, but just to mention a couple of them, the Republican Party is leveling questions about whether it's appropriate to have Alyssa Shurin, who will become now the head of the Department of Environmental Conservation, in that position, given that she's married to Paul Burns, who's the head of VPIRG. There have been questions about the Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott getting contracts with his construction company that are state contracts while he's been in the state legislature and in his position as lieutenant governor. And then there are also questions about Brent Raymond, who's the former head of the state office that helps deal with EB-5 visas, now leaving to work for a ski resort company that tries to get those EB-5 visas and people and investors coming in. Are you clear on all of those cases that there are no ethics violations?
You know, I'm really careful not to weigh in on specific cases. I will say I see a big difference between Alyssa Shurin. No one's accusing her of lining her own pockets. And we have a very clear executive. You know, I am the branch of government that has an executive policy that you have to sign as an employee, which Alyssa, any exempt employee, Alyssa, everyone else in my administration signs, that says that you shall not do those things. And we have a very specific conflict of interest policy that the current commissioner had to follow many times in his former years as a lawyer and arrest. That protects us from ensuring that incredibly capable people like Alyssa can serve in state government while their spouse has some other job. And so I'm not concerned about that one, to be candid with you. She's an extraordinary employee. She's incredibly ethical. She will recuse herself just like her former boss did. On the other ones, you're talking about money. That's a different conversation. And all I can say is, in the questions of money, you shouldn't be in state government to line your own pockets. So whether it's my folks, you know, Brent Raymond, or whether it's lieutenant governor or whatever, an ethics commission would help to ensure that when people have concerns of that nature, they would get answered, reviewed, and you'd have a response. And that's just why I think it makes good common sense.
Okay, let's go to Kevin, who's calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Kevin. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Good. You know, the governor was mentioning the opiate addiction problem, and the other half of that is the guns and the guns that are leaving the state and being sold for a profit in those other towns like New York, Hartford, Spring, you know, other places other than Vermont. And I feel like he dropped the ball on the recent vote to enact universal background checks. And I'm really curious why, when 75% of the Vermonters would have voted for that if it had been a referendum, why he didn't support it.
Well, as you probably know, it never got to me. It didn't even get out of the committee, its first committee in the Senate. Not to say that I would have supported it, but having said that, it's hard to tell, accuse me of dropping a ball when it never got to me. Having said that, Kevin, listen, I don't think that exporting guns is our biggest problem with heroin and opiate addiction. I just don't. I think our problem is that when we started selling opiates in the form of OxyContin with extraordinary, what can only be described as irrational exuberance, and we passed these pills out like candy, and then folks turned to the cheaper solution, which is pure heroin, and then we act surprised that we've got an opiate addiction problem. So I would say let's start with what's really driving this. FDA-approved drugs driving you to other opiates that are more readily available and cheaper in many cases. Let's go fix that problem.
I want to ask you about a potential deal with TDI New England. And this is a company that wants to build electric power lines under Lake Champlain. And in exchange for approval, they have offered a deal that would give $720 million to the state over the next 40 years. That's a lot of money. Some of that money would go towards Lake Champlain cleanup. Some of that money would go towards renewable energy projects, both very important to the state and to your administration. Let me just put it to you bluntly. Is TDI basically paying its way here with a purse that is very attractive to the state and goes right towards the state priorities?
Yes.
And that's not a problem, but I mean,
no,
if you're saying the money is more important than the potential dangers or the
well,
potential
no.
problems
if they
with
were
the power line.
If they were, listen, we have the Public Service Board review. Think they do a great job. I know they get beat up all the time. I think they're doing a great job. And if they see any environmental, all the other laws they got to follow, challenges with that line, they won't approve it. Having said that, yes, this is about money for Vermont. In other words, that juice is coming out of Hydro-Québec, most likely. It's going to go into southern markets. Vermont doesn't need it. We've got our Hydro-Québec power, and for the foreseeable future anyway. And if we can be the transmission line for that power, it's a huge benefit to rates. Our power rates go down. We can get millions and millions of dollars to clean up Lake Champlain, to take some care of our other environmental priorities. And in my view, there is no downside to us. Like, there are no environmental impacts that concern me. So having said that, the answer is yeah. Now, the only question is, you know, who's really going to get the juice? In other words, there's other transmission proposals being made to get that juice down to our southern neighbors. And whether TDI will be the final line, who knows.
And any word on when you're going to hear from the EPA about Vermont's Lake Champlain cleanup proposal?
I expect to hear from them by the end of August at the latest. So we're right, we're very close. We're having a great conversation with them. Gina McCarthy is a good friend of mine. She's the best administrator of the EPA we could ever dream of having. And, you know, my expectation is that they're going to be very happy with a lot of our plan. I'm sure they'll have some recommendations and suggestions. But, you know, I think that they are very happy that Vermont's finally passed a bill that's going to bring us clean water.
That's Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin. Thanks for spending the hour with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we go today, let me just give you a heads up on what's on tomorrow's program. We're going to be exploring the life of Vermonter Daisy Turner. She was born in 1883, the child of freed slaves. She became what Jane Beck calls a raconteur, a storyteller, and we're going to hear some of her stories from Jane Beck, who's the author of Daisy Turner's Kin, a new book that talks about Daisy and her family's lives on their homestead and Daisy Turner's legacy. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.